ভাগবতে বাসুদেবায় ওম নমো ভাগবতে বাসুদেবায় ওম নমো ভাগবতে বাসুদেবায় Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text Number 40. Karanadara Iva Apare Bhagavan Paradarshaka Atha Abhavashaye Bhagavan Narada Muni Sattamaha. Okay. Karnadara Iva Pare Bhagavan Paradarshakaham Athababhashe Bhagavan Narado Muni Sattamaha Karnadara Iva Pare Bhagavan Paradarshakaha Athababhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Sattamaham Karnadhara Ivapare Bhagavan Paradarshakaha Athababhashe Bhagavan Narado Muni Sattamaha. Please chant. Karnadara Ivapare Vapare please. Anyone else like to try? Karnadara Iva Pare Bhagavan Paradarshakaham Athababhashe Bhagavan Nadadhyani Satyamam. Synonyms. Karna Dharaha. Captain of the ship. Iva. Like. Apare. In the extensive oceans. Bhagavan. Representative of the Lord. Paradarshakaha. One who can give directions to the other side. Atha. Thus. Ababashe. Began to say. Bhagavan. The godly personality. Narada. The great sage Narada. Muni Sattamaha. The greatest among the devotee philosophers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. Translation. You're like a captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination. Thus addressed, the godly personality Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. Please repeat. You're like a captain of a ship, in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination. Thus addressed, the godly personality Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are different types of philosophers, and the greatest of all of them are those who have seen the personality of Godhead and have surrendered themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Among all such pure devotees of the Lord, Devarshi Narada is the chief. Therefore, he has been described herein as the greatest of all philosopher devotees. Unless one has become a sufficiently learned philosophy by hearing the Vedanta philosophy from a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot be a learned philosopher devotee. One must be very faithful, learned, and renounced. Otherwise, one cannot be a pure devotee. A pure devotee of the Lord can give us direction toward the other end of nescience, which is knowledge. Devarshi Narada used to visit the palace of Maharaj Yudhishthira because the Pandavas were all pure devotees of the Lord, and the Devarshi was always ready to give them good counsel whenever needed. Omagyanatimadandasya gananjana shilakaya chakshur unmanitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So, we've come from the position where King Dhritarashtra was living at the palace of Hastinapur, and in doing so, he was really and truly humiliating himself, but he didn't really care, because what he cared about was the continuation or perpetuation of his sense gratification. He wanted to continue eating nice foods. Remember, the war is over. The Kauravas have lost the war. The Pandavas and their allies have won the war. So, in effect, in truth, Dhritarashtra's, he's a loser. He headed up the losing team. But that seems to not bother him, that he comes to beg from the winners. It's enough to lose, but then to go and beg from the winners, please give me food, please give me shelter, please give me clothing, please give me whatever is useful for my health, please enable me to maintain my strength, please continue to treat me as a king, although he's not the king. The king now is definitely, without a doubt, unequivocally Yudhisthira. And that was what this whole battle was about. That Dhritarashtra refused to cede, to give up the kingdom to its rightful owner, namely Yudhisthira. And we know that because King Pandu, who is the brother of Dhritarashtra, once ruled the kingdom. But as a result of a curse that he received, he decided to renounce his throne and live for the rest of his life in the forest. The curse happened to be that he would no longer be able to engage in sexual intercourse, because if he did, he would die in the act. Just as he killed two deers many years ago, who were in the act of sexual intercourse, and he was out hunting, and he shot both of them. Actually, this was illegal, and that was mentioned to him by one of the deer, who happened to be, they both happened to be, yogis, who had put on the form of a deer for no other reason than they actually wanted to have a child. And because they were yogis with great restraint, great detachment, they were not able to arouse the kind of passion that is necessary for that type of activity. So they assumed the form of a deer in order to arouse that passion, you know, in the mode of ignorance. So it happened to be that one of the deer, of the two deer, whom Pandu had shot, was still alive. And he told Pandu that, why have you killed us? And Pandu replied that there's nothing wrong with that. Killing deer is allowed for Kshatriyas. So the deer looked at him and said, yes, that's true. But is killing deer while they're in the act of sexual intercourse, is that allowed? So Pandu, oh my God. He said, no, it's not. He says, well, you're the king and you're supposed to set the perfect example so that everybody follows it. If you go around killing deer while they're in the act of sexual engagement, then everybody will do that, and then the law will no longer be forceful or value. So the king was very regretful and very sorry about that. He had forgotten that. So he said to the yogi, please, be kind and forgive me. It was an unfortunate mistake. He says, yes, but you have killed me. I will be dead in a few seconds. And my spouse. Why do you deserve to be forgiven? When you're the king, you're supposed to know what's what. You're supposed to set the example. He said, no, I won't forgive you. He said, you won't? No. You deserve to get exactly what you gave. And what you gave is you've taken away the pleasure that we were about to experience. So you too, if you engage in sexual activity, just as we were, you will die at that time. So that was the reason that Pandu decided. He was the king. Dhritarashtra did not have the right to be the king, although he was older brother to a Dhritarashtra. There was Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. So the one who had the right was Pandu. Why Pandu? Well, first of all, Dhritarashtra, as we know, is blind. not only blind physically, but even mentally, as we will see. And he could not act as a king. He could not fight, really. He wasn't able to amass territories. He was not able to defend the character. He was not able to see what was going on with his own eyes and make decisions based upon his assessment. So therefore, Pandu was chosen to rule. But as I've just mentioned, he decided to give it up and live in the forest as an ascetic. His wives, they refused to stay alone in the kingdom, although Pandu said very clearly, I cannot really protect you in the woods, in the forest. They said, I don't care. We just want to continue serving you. And this was their mentality. They would prefer to serve him in the rustic, forested place where there was no beauty of the kingdom. There were no jewels, there were no palaces, there were no perfumes, except those which came from the flowers. They did not have the splendor that they had in the kingdom. They said, we don't care. Our joy, our happiness, our satisfaction, our fulfillment is lovingly serving you. That is our life. So he yielded. He said, okay, that'll be fine. But you'll have to dress in a much more simpler fashion. And in so doing, there will be no temptation to me. And it will be simple. We will keep apart to some extent. Because otherwise, what will happen is that we will engage in sexual activity, and that will be the end of your king. So they did that for many years. So I simply wanted to give a little background to how this comes about. So anyway, when Pandu left the kingdom, he gave the kingdom as a gift to his brother Dhritarashtra. Now we might ask, well, how could he give it to Dhritarashtra? Dhritarashtra was not capable, he was not qualified to rule, and that was true. Nonetheless, for decision making, he wanted Dhritarashtra to have the kingdom, but he would rule it under the counsel, under the guidance, under the direction of Vidura, one of the greatest statesmen in the world, and Bhishma Dev, not only a statesman, but archer. And between those two, they could help him make decisions that would be necessary for the ongoing aspect of the kingdom. So, however, Dhritarashtra still had authority to veto anything they said. But generally, he never would or never did, because basically he was more of a figurehead than other. However, he became more prominent as time went on. So now what happened is that, I won't go into the details, we've already heard it, that a war took place between Pandu's sons and all their allies, and Kuru's and the and Dhritarashtra's sons and all their allies. So there would be a gigantic war. There was a dice game in which the Pandavas lost by the cheating methods of Shakuni, who is the uncle of Duryodhana. Duryodhana is the son of Dhritarashtra. So what happened is that he lost his entire kingdom. He even lost his brothers, himself, his wife. Anyway, the matter was further discussed, and it was decided that the kingdom would be given back to the Pandavas, provided that the Pandavas agreed to a condition. Because many people were a little disturbed and upset that the Pandavas had nothing. But so by providing a condition by which the Pandavas could gain back their kingdom, that would be a means, that would be the way, that all would be well again. So the condition was is that the Pandavas for 13 years would have to live in the forest. No kingdom. No. No beauty. You know, the beauties of palace life. And so they would have to live there. And they agreed to this. But in addition to that, there was a 14th year in which they would have to live incognito, which is means disguised. They would enter a kingdom and they would ask for service there. And in so doing, they would receive service, but they would never be known by anyone there until the 14 years were up, were finished. At that time, they could reveal their identity, and they would, of course, at that point, be given the kingdom that they had lost through cheating, gambling. Shakuni was the gambler. So that happened. 14 years passed by, and the Pandavas, they succeeded in achieving, although Duryodhana, he claimed no. There was still some time left. But Bhishma Dev, who happens to have been there, he said no, they did. They did succeed. So anyway, Yudhishthira, who was entitled to the kingdom because his father was the king, and it was settled that when Yudhishthira would be old enough, mature enough, and understanding enough to be able to manage the kingdom, manage it through understanding, manage it through skill, manage it through amassing allies. When he would be able to manage it, then Dhritarashtra would return the kingdom, would give the kingdom to Yudhishthira, and that would be the end of it. That was supposed to be the way it should be. But Dhritarashtra, as we learn in the Krishna book, Dhritarashtra was very greedy and very ambitious. And although he was blind and he was ruling the kingdom through, as I have already said, ruling it through Vidura and Bhishma Dev, he loved the idea of power. He loved the idea of being chief. And of course, why not? That's why we all came into this world. To be a lord, to be a king, to be important, to feel valuable, to be respected, to be honored, to be glorified. That's why we're here. One time we were in the spiritual world, and we were living as servants of the Lord. But the living entity has independence and could see the Lord doing his service and could even question their own position, excuse me, as a servitor. Could question his own position as a servitor, which he did, which all of us did. What am I doing here? Why am I serving the Lord? What does it feel like to be a Lord? What does it feel like to be important, to be glorified, to be looked up to be applauded? The king, the Lord, he gets it all. So this is a dharma. This is against the actual principle of our inherent position. What is our inherent position? Jivera sarupahoi krishnera nityadas. It is the constitutional position of the living entity to be an eternal servant of Krishna. And that's what we're supposed to do. And when we do that, like a fish in water, it swims without obstruction, without suffocation. But if the fish comes out of water, then only misery, trouble, difficulty arise, and the fish will die. So this is what happened to all many, many living entities. They decided that they no longer wanted to serve the Lord. So when you don't want to serve the Lord, you have to have a place to go where you can be served as a Lord. So that was the whole idea. So this material world was created for those persons, and all many different things are created so that the living entities in this world can have this sense of lordship. So we should understand that lordship is what people have come here for in some form or another. Small, you have a child, you're a lord. You're head of a gigantic corporation, you're a lord. You're a famous football player, basketball player, political player, you're a lord. So people are gaining all this lordship through a competitive situation, which is unhealthy, because each one is pitted against the other. Each one wants to be better than the other. And in the course of this, conflict arises, envy arises, hostility arises, and fracases or explosions arise, and therefore we have all sorts of conflicts, and we have wars. And as Srila Prabhupada so brilliantly and wonderfully said, he said, you can't settle war, you can't stop war through all these United Nations. That's not going to stop it, just through negotiation. Unless the people who are negotiating are God-realized, God-centered, God-focused, and receiving guidance from the Supreme Lord, there can be no peace. And that's exactly, look at what's happening today. It's absolutely amazing. So not only are people acting in an improper, wrong, adharmic fashion, but they are creating a future which is pure misery. Miseries that come of their own accord. Misery which comes from their own body and mind. Miseries which come from other people's bodies and minds, and also from the demigods or the natural calamities. So people are suffering everywhere with little drops of material happiness. And the result of that is that they are running this way and that way, this doctor and that doctor, to get some kind of solace, some kind of. So here in this particular verse, Narada Muni has shown up for a reason, just as he often does. His reason is to help Yudhishthir. Help Yudhishthir to understand, first of all, the situation. Help him to overcome his grief, the grief that he feels for Gandhari and his uncle Dhritarashtra. Yes, so he's come to help him, help Yudhishthir get a fix on this so that he can be peaceful. Second of all, Yudhishthir has come into the, he's in the palace, and he's looked for Dhritarashtra. And he's looking here, he looked here and there and was not able to find him. So he asked Sanjaya, who was the personal assistant of Dhritarashtra, and he asked him, have you seen my uncle and my aunt, Gandhari, and Vidura, where are they? So Sanjaya said, I don't know, I looked around, I couldn't find them, because he was usually with him as a secretary. During the battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra could not see the battle. He's back in Hastinapur. But through his assistant, Sanjaya, who had been given the power to see clairvoyantly onto the battlefield, he was able to see it and give Dhritarashtra the play or the events that were taking place, who Bhishma was killing, who Dronacharya was killing, who Arjuna was killing. He could give all that information. So we can understand the intimacy and the closeness that Sanjaya had for many years, as it is mentioned, with Dhritarashtra. So Sanjaya, he feels very kind of alone without Dhritarashtra, because he's not serving him. So he doesn't know where he is. And as I already mentioned, Yudhishthir, he doesn't know where they are. They look around, they can't find him. They can't find Dhritarashtra. And the first thought that Yudhishthir had is that maybe as a result of all the grief, of all the sorrow, of all the misery. Remember, he's just lost 100 sons. every one of which he was loved and he was attached to and made him feel strong and big and great. I have 100 sons. And Gandhari, she also was very upset and very disturbed. And although they were, we have to stop the child over there, please. No, we can't have that. Okay, so she was very disturbed. And so disturbed was Gandhari that she blamed Krishna for this. She said, you didn't have to allow this war, all my sons to be killed. You didn't have to do that. He said, they properly deserved whatever they had. So she said, for doing this, I curse you. So she cursed Krishna that in 36 years he would leave the world and all the Yadus, they would perish, which actually did happen at some point in time. Krishna allowed this. He could have counteracted it. But he felt that that was part of his plan, and therefore he went along with it. So therefore, the question came is, where is Dhritarashtra? Where is Gandhari? Where is Vidura? So Narada Muni, being the fixer-upper, he materialized, or he would do that at different times. He would suddenly appear. He would say what he had to. He'd give the guidance that he had to, and then he would disappear. When Dhruva Maharaj went out to the kingdom looking, he wanted to find, a spiritual master, and he wanted to become greater than even Brahma, because he was insulted by his stepmother. He didn't care. He was 5 years old. So Narada Muni appeared there and began giving him guidance and instruction. So here again, Narada Muni appears, and the first thing he said is that Dhritarashtra is now in an ascetic or a yogi community, and he is practicing Ashtanga Yoga. He has taken the advice of Vidura to try to go back home, back to Godhead, rather than continue just living like a slavish dog in the palace, which is actually a very great feat. It's great because it gives us direction. So many of the people out there are like Dhritarashtras in one way or another. And by our guidance, by our direction, by our encouragement, by our enthusiasm, we can get these people to take books and read these books and let them know that these three miseries can be overcome by taking shelter, by absorbing oneself, by deeply becoming committed to lovingly serving the Lord. And through this loving service, the Lord will reciprocate and give one the peace, to give one the strength, to give one the guidance, give one the bliss, the happiness that everyone is looking for but never finding. So Narada Muni mentions that a particular river, I think it's a Sapta something river, anybody remember? Okay, anyway, it's a river, and it's up on the southern side of the Himalayas. And Dhritarashtra, he's there, and he's practicing Ashtanga Yoga, the eight-form method. Yama means all the things that you don't do. And Niyama, all the things you do, just as we have. You accept whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service, reject whatever is unfavorable, those things. So Yama and Niyama, those are the first two limbs. And then there is asana, sitting for periods of time, for meditation. Pranayama, which is control over the breath, using it to control the mind. Pranayama. Pratyahara, which is control over the senses. And then dhyana, excuse me, which is when the mind is controlled, it is then fixed either on the tip of the nose or between the two eyebrows, or in even one of the other chakras. Then the dharana, then there's dhyana, which is even a higher level of meditation where one becomes even more deeply absorbed. and then finally samadhi, in which one enters the infinite light. So one may ask, well, why would Dhritarashtra want to enter the infinite light? Actually, you know, he comes basically in the Vaishnav line. The reason was is that Vidura could not teach him. He could not give him any more than of the five forms of liberation. He could only give him the one, Sayujya, because he had committed many offenses against the Pandavas. And Krishna did not take that lightly. So he gave him, through the yoga system, the means by which he could enter the infinite light. So what would be the value? Well, first of all these different methods that I've mentioned bring one to a level of serenity, calmness, gentleness. And from there, when a person achieves this, the next thing is that he can slowly enter into this samadhi. So what is samadhi for an impersonalist, with sayujya? There are four other forms of liberations. Sayujya is one of them, and it's the one that devotees never want. But Dhritarashtra was a materialist. He acted solely and totally as a materialist. And although he could see Vidura's point that it would be a waste of time to hang around, rather try to find God, but the only God he could find would be the one that he would be allowed to find, which is the impersonal. Some people are not even allowed because of their activities, their deeds, their lack of devotional activities, their offenses, to even go to the other four. For example, there is Sarupya, which is getting the same form as the Lord. Salokya, living on the same planet as the Lord. Samipya, which is having a friendly, loving association with the Lord. And Sarshti, having the opulences of the Lord. So he would not even be allowed that, because that is devotional, even on a lower level. So what happened was that that's what he would, that's all he could get. And Vidura was rather sad that that's all he could teach him, but that's it. So anyway, what happened was this. He learned those yogic techniques. Remember Sati? When Sati was upset and humiliated by her father, what she had done in making offenses to Lord Shiva. So what she did is she entered the yogic trance and burned her body through yogic technique. She could create heat in the body, which caused it completely go up in flames. So Dhritarashtra, he did the same thing. He learned that technique, and his body burned completely. So that was the end of his physical body. And he entered, as far as I could understand, the impersonal Brahman. So what is the value of the personal Brahman? Basically, one can only attain peace. There is no devotional service in the impersonal Brahman. For example, if we have all this light here, and we increase it hundreds of thousands of watts, will I be able to see anybody here? No, all I'll see is white light. And although I may have the illusion, in fact, Prabhupada refers to this Brahmagyoti as the last snare of illusion. Yes, in other words, you think you're God. You think you have it all. You have no conflicts, no problems, no difficulties. You just rest. It's pretty much like being on a raft, you know, on the ocean, and you're just there. But after some time, what happens? You get bored. You want to do something. You want to act. You want to become involved in something. And so the only way that could be done is through the personal form. As the Bhagavatam says, those who think they are liberated in this life, but who are devoid of devotional service to you, are of impure intelligence. Although they accept severe austerities and penances and rise to the spiritual position to impersonal Brahman realization, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. So that's it. As long as we don't want to worship the lotus feet, serve the lotus feet, love the lotus feet, glorify the lotus feet of the Lord, honor the lotus feet, as long as we don't want to do that, then what happens, the result is that you come back down to this material world. So you go from the area of light and you go to the area of darkness. And then you start over, maybe you set up an educational institution, a hospital, or some altruistic activity to gain some personalism. But the important thing is that Dhritarashtra would have to learn to become a loving, serving, respecting individual towards the Supreme Lord. So that's what happened to him. Gandhari, being a very chaste wife, while the flames were going up, she saw no other outlet or alternative for herself because she loved her husband even to the extent that she blindfolded herself for a whole life because he was blind. So she entered that same fire and she left also. So Vidura was just left there. He was there and he decided that he would not go back to the kingdom at that time, certainly not, and he would simply go on pilgrimage and continue the process for him of purification. And he had fulfilled his mission, which was to get his wayward brother, Dhritarashtra, his illusion brother, his deluded brother, his miserable brother, to at least a place of some degree of peacefulness. Of course, there's no service in that peaceful condition. So we devotees have nothing to do with it, want nothing to do with it. We consider it abominable. All we want to do is lovingly serve the Lord, surrender to the Lord, offer our love to the Lord, and in so doing, give pleasure to the Lord. And in so doing, when Krishna is pleased, he reciprocates and gives us pleasure through the heart, and we feel varying degrees of transcendental bliss. So in growing transcendental bliss, we grow, we develop, and we feel fulfilled because we have the closeness, the nearness, the unity of the Supreme Lord. That is real. That is true. That is not illusion. That is not just living in the light and then coming out. This is forever and ever. We stay with the Lord, ever everlastingly serving him. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions or any doubts or any uncertainties, please feel free. It is getting a little late. It's 26 after. If you would prefer to go to prasadam now, you're welcome to do that. But if anyone wants, I'm sorry I went a little late, but there was a lot to cover and even much more, and I made it as concise as I possibly could. Again, my apologies for keeping you so late. Is there any question that's nagging anyone here? No? Yes, please. Could you come a little closer? Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, here's that. You don't have to. That's okay.
Thank you. It was a very nice class. Thank you very much. I missed the part. What was the name of the person, the Mataji, who cursed Krishna? Was it Gandhari?
I'm not hearing you clearly. What? The Mataji who cursed Narada?
Cursed Krishna. Who was?
That was Gandhari.
That was Gandhari.
Yeah, Gandhari. Yeah, she was upset because all her sons were gone, and she felt Krishna was ultimately responsible, and he could have avoided that, so she cursed.
So I suppose that's why she had to follow Dhritarashtra into the Brahman.
Yeah. Yes, there you go. Anyone else? Okay. Yeah, I have one Mataji here. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for the wonderful class. In the 10 offenses to the holy name, and the 9th offense says that we should not instruct, we should not give Krishna consciousness to a faithless person. So, like, we always go for the Harinam, distribute books. So how we know who is faithless?
And then you have to come closer. What? That we chant it every morning, the 9th offense to the holy name? Okay, can you repeat the ninth offense for me, please, just so that I...
The ninth offense is to instruct a faithless person about
faithless
the glories of the Holy Name.
Yeah, so now what is the question that in that regard?
When we're on Harinam and doing book distribution, how do we distinguish who is faithless and who is faithful? How do we...
what it really means when we said we should not instruct a faithless person, it really means a person who, when we go on Harinam, if people they stand and they look, they may ridicule, they may belittle. We are indifferent to all of that. However, nor do we try to give the Holy Name to somebody who acts in that manner. When we see a person is acting sarcastically, condescendingly, generally, thank you very much, have a good day, Hare Krishna, and you just walk away. There's no need to pursue that kind of conversation. On the other hand, those persons who are genuinely interested, even if they're mildly interested, and they want some further guidance, then you can draw them out a little bit. Where are you from? How much education do you have in spiritual life? Do you have a spiritual master? Those kind of things. And then you can take it from there. But no, we don't have to pursue any conversation or any activity with persons who are faithless. Faithless meaning they have a very low or indifferent or degraded, condescending matter towards the Holy Name. Okay? Is that it? Okay. Thank you again. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki. All glories to Bhagavatam Ki. Please keep up your wonderful service. My best wishes to all of you. Thank you for coming. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.